This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm so happy that on today's program we have Joy on Paper's own legal eagle, Bill Larson from Larson & Larson, who is going to talk to us about all sorts of exciting things in the law. And I understand, Bill, that you just came back from an American Intellectual Property Lawyer Association conference.
That's right.
Was that fun?
It was really fun. 2,000 lawyers.
2,000 lawyers. Oh, my goodness.
Patent, trademark, and copyright lawyers.
Oh, wow. A wild group there. So that was in Washington, D.C.
Correct.
Tell me, have you ever visited the old patent office?
Yes.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yes.
I don't know if anyone ever goes to Washington, D.C., they should go and visit the old patent office. And it sort of sends chills up your spine when you think of all of the early patents. I mean, Edison's patents and all of the patents that went through that, Alexander Graham Bell and all of those fantastic patents. And that was such a beautiful office.
That's right. It's a repository for all the inventions.
It is. And it is a beautiful, beautiful place to visit. And you just wonder why? I mean, you know, they are designing offices today, and they are so ugly and so unpleasant to work in. And then you walk into that building, you walk into those offices, and you think, oh, it would have been a joy just to go to work, just to work there. It was so nice.
Huh? That's right. That's correct.
Oh, I know, and I know that the current offices look nothing like that. So anyway, so you had lots of fun, and I just want to tell everyone that the American Intellectual Property Lawyer Association is important. When you are looking for an intellectual property lawyer, look for one who belongs to this. How do you pronounce it? AIPLA?
AIPLA.
AIPLA. Okay, that's a great acronym. And you need to have a lawyer, and I can tell you from experience, you need to have a lawyer who knows what he is doing. And so that's why we are so happy that Bill comes in here every month to talk to us. And it's always fun. I ask the listener to send me in stories or to send in questions about legal points. And so I was very happy when I have a listener named Colin who sent me in a story. And he wanted to know because I think he had sort of been planning to do something similar to what this man did. And this is a very interesting story, and I'm sure many of you have read, and Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, which was written by Seth Graham Smith, and he is now involved in a major lawsuit.
That's right, just filed.
Just filed, and it is a biggie. And it's so funny. You think, whoa! Now he made quite a lot of money from first of all his Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and then of course the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and so he must.
But apparently, the third one wasn't as good as the first two.
Not as good,
according to the complaint.
Well, Hachette, which is the publisher in England, have filed a lawsuit. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
It's a breach of contract. They advanced, as alleged in the complaint, a certain amount of money. I think it was $500,000, and for the third book. And he was years behind schedule, according to the complaint. And when the third work was delivered, the complaint alleges that it was plagiarized from a book that was some 120 years old and was not up to the quality of the first two.
So,
So they want their money back.
They want their money back because they advanced him, and the deal was like a $4 million deal. You get a $4 million deal, you think that would be incentive enough to actually sit down and write that page a day. And somehow that didn't incentivize him.
Yeah, there's something going on behind the scenes probably, which we won't know until the case proceeds a little bit and there's some discovery and we can find out what the defendant's arguments are.
But it is an interesting thing, and most people don't understand that you know, if you are successful and if you've had one book that's been selling really well and the publisher comes along and says, okay, I'm going to give you a book deal, you have to fulfill the deal. And in this case, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, he's a good writer. And anyone who read Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, I assume it's not your style.
Not my style, but I heard that a lot of people liked it.
Yeah, it's very well written. And I love Abraham Lincoln books, so I read a lot of them. And I read it mostly to see if he had any terrible inaccuracies, historical inaccuracies, and he didn't. He had obviously done a great deal of research about the time and the place, and he was able to really bring that whole era to life. And the fact that he turned Abraham Lincoln into a zombie killer, well, why not, you know?
And a copy of his contract with the publisher is attached to the complaint. So if you want to see what a big contract looks like from a big publisher, there's an example.
Okay, well, I will put that actually on my Facebook page today when I get back home, and everybody can have a look at it if they want. I'll give you the link because it is intriguing, and here this man had an opportunity to have a really great lawyer. I'm sure out there in Los Angeles where he's working, and yet he managed to really make a mess of it, and it's going to cost him a lot of money, I have a feeling.
Well, it's probably going to be expensive to defend, and so it's probably the kind of case that will be settled in one way or another, but it's kind of hard for the court to force him to write a good book, right? So the court can't tell the defendant to do anything. All they can say is give back the money.
But they can if they find out that he's actually copied a book that's been out there for a long time, like 120 years in public domain. If you just copy that, you do have problems. And there are people who are going into the, Gutenberg, and they are taking books that are in public domain and mm-hmm. trying to just copy the whole thing.
Right.
And
now they have software that can compare them and
exactly.
that use algorithms to see whether you plagiarize.
You can't get away with it. I mean, it's somebody's going to find you. So I actually did hear of one woman who took an entire book and she copied it, you know, from I don't know if it was Gutenberg, but one of those places. And she copied it. And then she went in and search and replace. And search and replaced every name in the book. And then she sent it off to Amazon and published it, you know, as something that she had written. Well, of course, I mean, there are people even, you see, there are people like me. Now, I have read most of the books on Gutenberg, and I remember almost everything I read. So I can be sitting along there reading, and
I've heard this before.
And, of course, I have this algorithm in my brain, so definitely.
Can tell. So,
I
don't know I don't know if the allegations are true. Really can't tell until the defendant gets a chance to chime in.
But this is going to be a fun case to follow.
It should be a fun case to follow. I predict it'll settle very quickly. There's only $500,000 apparently at issue.
That's all.
Well, but when you have big New York City lawyers, that's gone in a day or two.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's
it's not like it's a $50 million case. It's just $500,000. So you wonder what's really going on.
Well, I don't understand why he would do this. And because it's not great for his reputation. And he had a great reputation up until now. And so it's very interesting.
Yeah, we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, we have to see what happens.
We have to give him a fair shake and give him a chance to answer.
Maybe he wrote exactly.
Maybe he's got an explanation.
And maybe he went back in time himself. And maybe that could happen, you know, to a writer. You live so much at your computer, and you're working at 2 and 3 in the morning, and mm-hmm. you have
so
a few
don't
drinks.
Don't render judgment until
yeah, exactly.
all the facts
so
are
you
out.
Never know. So, but we will follow this. You'll
Good.
Follow this for us,
we
right?
We will follow this,
okay,
yes.
Well, that's great. So, as I was saying, it is a wonderful thing to have a lawyer on board. It's always great to have a lawyer on board. I don't care what business you are in. Oh, boy, you need a lawyer on board. And so it's nice that you're here today. Let's talk a little bit. There's so many things, but I also had a writer in here 2 weeks ago, and she was talking about her problem of trying to get her rights back.
Yes.
And this happens. It's funny. You might have written a book 20 years ago, and you know, and you're doing other things in between, and then you come along and you start writing again, and you suddenly you make a name for yourself, and those books or the writing that you did 20 years ago, it might not have been your very, very best, but it still was yours, and you might be able to sell it today. But if you don't have the rights, you're
in trouble. It sounds like in this case, the author assigned all of the copyright to the publisher.
That's a bad thing to do.
That's an outright sale. It's like selling a car to somebody and then coming back later and saying, I want the car back. They have the right to say no.
And so I tell writers, never sign away your copyright.
Right. The default setting is give a license.
Give a license.
A license is a legal word which means permission. You give somebody permission to do it. And then if they don't do it right or they don't do it pay you enough, then you can end the permission. But once you sell it, it's gone.
Now, in the case of a contract, there usually is a clause in there.
Absolutely,
about reverting
always.
Rights. If the publisher himself or itself does not do what they're supposed to do.
Right, we have what's called a performance clause. All right, so if I give you permission to do something and you're going to sell it and then I'm going to get a portion of the proceeds, I can say, well, in the event that you don't exceed a certain threshold, your rights end and I get them back. It reverts back. It's called a performance clause.
But, you know, nowadays, of course, in the old days, I think when a publisher let a book go out of print and they didn't do anything, that could cause a reversion.
There could be a number of different reasons for reversion. Out of print, or they could waive it on their own. They could take
lots
whatever
of things.
Right. But you want to have that in there. You always want to have a clause which is your back door to get out of the contract if they don't perform.
And, well, let's say, this is just hypothetical, but say you have this book and it's been with a publisher for a while. It hasn't sold very well, and you now secretly and behind.
Well, you change your mind and you want a new pony.
No, but secretly you've been in talks with somebody in Hollywood who wants to buy the book, and so you realize that now you're going to be able to really sell this book someday.
Well, the contract, like...
What happens then?
The contract in the first point would have other, what we call downstream rights, okay? So if you've given a license for somebody to, say, print, that's all you've given them is the print right, or you've only given the e-book right, okay, and you've reserved that downstream revenue, movies, Broadway shows, whatever could be adapted from your writing, you usually reserve that. So it's not a problem for the author to negotiate with others concerning those other rights. But you always have to have a performance clause to protect yourself from the other party not performing so you can terminate the license. And any copyright attorney, any agent will make sure that that's in there for you.
Okay, so it's something to think about. It's something to, you know, really keep in mind that, first of all, always make sure of anything you sign. And this is one of the problems I've been talking to several writers recently who have signed bad things at some point
right.
in their lives.
If you're signing a contract, get a lawyer to look at it first.
Absolutely. I just can't. And get an AIPLA lawyer to look at it first. Because
right. Get a lawyer that has expertise in copyright
because,
or agency.
Because it
or,
is a complicated thing. I mean, there are a lot of laws out there for everything. So, I mean, you don't want
a
construction, you know, your friend, your brother-in-law, who's a lawyer in the construction business, is not going to be up on everything that they need
no,
to know.
Because there's what we have we call magic words, okay? Copyright law requires these magic words, and the copyright contracts and these publishing contracts have magic words that everyone understands covers the terms of the agreement. And if those are not in there, the layperson wouldn't know that. They wouldn't know what's missing.
Exactly.
Or stated incorrectly, and that's where they get in trouble. They think it's okay, and it's not.
You know, and most of the, generally speaking, I would say that publishers are not out to, you know, take advantage of writers.
Definitely
they do.
Not.
That's not what they want. They want to, you know, promote the writers. They want to do the best job for the writers. And they really make every effort to do so. And the big publishing houses are, you know, they have in-house lawyers, and they're standardized contracts. But still,
know your rights.
Things happen.
Yeah.
You know, you have to
any of the big trade publishers are going to have standardized contracts, and they usually don't negotiate them because they want them the same for all of their authors. They can't have 500 different styles of contract. So you really take it or leave it for the most part.
Like one of the things is most of them will have standard that they get to select the cover. It's only a very rare number of authors who can decide to can say no to a cover.
Right. You're going to give up rights, okay?
Yeah.
All kinds of rights when you work with a publisher. You're going to maybe give up some of that artistic integrity. You can't make all the decisions. And that's part of the give and take of a publishing contract. You're giving up something, but you're getting something in return.
But when you have a contract, and then when, as things go along, you get contract for a new series of books, you can negotiate terms.
Sure, you can always renegotiate.
And that's something, again, you need to have a lawyer help you with this because you want to make
Absolutely.
Sure that
a lawyer or an agent.
Well, a lawyer or an agent, but
or
I
agents or lawyers. What's really changed the industry is the fact that the digital age. Okay, way back when, all we had was hard copy books. That was it. You had hard copies and you had soft copy books. That was it. There wasn't anything else. Now, with e-books, it's changed everything. You'll typically get a larger percentage of the sales made in an e-book, but the sale cost is very low as compared to the hardback book. So even though your percentage is higher, your revenues may be lower. For instance, Amazon, right, allows self-publishers to sell their books, and I think they give up 70% of the proceeds.
Mm-hmm.
But still, what's the average cost of an e-book these days?
Well, it's much less than a hardback book.
Right,
less.
Significantly less.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you have to determine what type of publishing is going to occur. Is it going to be hardback, and then we're going to go into softback, or we're going to go directly into e-books? You have to make that determination because the rights you grant and the money you're going to get back are going to be different depending on how you sell the work.
And one of the important things when you are negotiating a contract is to take into consideration things like when you're doing a book deal, you're not going to sign at that point your movie rights or rights for other types of merchandising, for
Typically
example.
Typically not, no.
You don't sign it at that point.
Only an established writer would be asked to do that.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that because you don't know.
You
don't know what the future can bring. And, you know, suddenly you can find yourself with a theme park. So you just don't know. But one of the things that publishers do ask is for territory. And this is something that they usually do right up in the front nowadays, I think, of contracts, especially with the big houses.
Yes.
Because they have established territories that they want to do.
Exclusivity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so you can't sort of go into another territory that where they're going to be selling your book. So you can't.
Right. So if they're only releasing it in hardback and then you sell it to somebody else as an ebook on Amazon, no one's going to buy the hard copy.
Yeah, exactly.
Or less people.
Less people. So definitely you have to really think about that. And as we said, always the copyright, even with the biggest publisher, comes along and says, you know, we want it. The copyright has to stay with you. And I'm telling people, if they ever are offered a deal where they're offered a fee for their book, I would run away from that. It's not, it's a fee is a flat payment.
That's it. You get one check and that's it.
And that's it. And that's bye-bye.
If the book flops, then you did okay. If you hit one over the fence, then you may have left some money on
the table. Yeah, exactly. You may have left a lot of money on the
table.
So
typically you want a percentage of the revenue.
Exactly. So you have to always think about that in advance. It's not something that you can sort of wait at the last minute and do. So when when we're talking about rights, what are some of the really important things that people should think about
In terms of their publishing rights?
Yeah,
they want to make sure that they are going to retain the downstream rights. That's the most important, just in case you hit one over the fence and somebody wants to pick it up for a movie, you get 100% of those proceeds later. Of course, the publishers are going to ask for a portion of that, and they may try. But, of course, it's different for the new author than the established author. Okay, the established author has a lot greater negotiating stance, okay, because they're established, and it's usually a foregone conclusion that the next work is going to be very popular. So they're not going to have to do a significant amount of advertising. It should fly off the shelves. So they have better negotiating power. The problem for the young author is they don't have a lot of negotiating power. It's really a take it or leave it contract. And so then they may have to sign away those rights or they don't get a deal. That's a decision you have to make, each writer has to make for themselves when they're going into these contracts. Now, usually the publishing agreements will provide for certain revenues if the work is picked up and derived into a movie or so forth. Mm-hmm. And so it's not as if you're giving away all the rights, you're still going to get proceeds. But if you have a very popular book and you've saved those rights, you're negotiating stance for the derivative rights are going to be a lot stronger. You're going to get more money. And this is all the gamble of negotiation. And all the risk of business. How do you make the decision?
Okay, well, that is good advice. And I would also like to say, just I have one little story. I want to get your opinion of this. An author came to me, and they have signed a deal, a very expensive deal, I mean, for somebody to publish their work. And they're not happy with the sort of the timeline, the publisher, or not the, they're not a real, well, they're sort of a publisher. But they have not met all of the deadlines that the person expected. So they wrote a book, they sent it in for submission, this group have edited it, and more or less, not, how can I say, it wasn't a top-notch job as far as the author is concerned.
Right.
He discovered after receiving the edits back from this group that the edits were not really well done. And he discovered so many more errors himself as he was reading the book. And he found even, you know, typographical errors and all of these things that they had said they were going to clean up before they published the book. And the process, instead of taking, as he was told, it would take, you know, between 6 to 8 weeks, I think it's dragged on almost 18 months. But he signed an $8,000 deal. And what can he do now at this point?
That's very difficult because of the subjectiveness of the opinions of the people, right? On the one side, the editors may say, these are perfectly fine edits, and this is what we're going with. And the artist or the author may say, no, that they don't meet my standards. And because that's so subjective, it's very difficult to solve that problem in a court of law, right?
Uh-huh.
Because it's not black and white, okay? Now, you can put certain terms into your publishing agreement where you have certain integrity, and let's say you have a right of refusal based on edits and so forth. But the best bet in those circumstances is maybe to hire an intermediary who can come in and try to help solve the problem, because the court system is not designed to fix every problem we have in our life every day. All right, it's a forum where it can assist you in resolving disputes, but it's not the end all of all disputes. Too many people are anxious to just grab a lawyer, run into court, and start suing, and that's typically a bad decision. There is an enormous number of mediators and agents and others can be go-betweens to bring the parties together and get them to work together to get the contract back on track without going into the court system and asking a judge or a jury to make the decision for you. The other problem we have with the court system is that if you file a complaint today, let's say in the state court system of Florida, it's 6 to 8 years to get to trial. And Lord knows where anybody's going to be 6 to 8 years from now. So that's not a fast or effective way to solve this type of a problem. The parties are going to have to come together in good faith. They're going to have to give and take a little bit and come up with a solution, because the court system is not going to resolve that particular problem.
Of course, if he had originally taken this contract and shown it to a lawyer, the lawyer, I think, would have identified the fact that there were no time limits based on, from the publisher's point of view. For example, he gave, for the first edit, as I mentioned, they had told him 6 to 8 weeks from getting his document to publishing. And just that process of getting the first bunch of edits took like almost 4 months before he got it back. And that it's not written in the contract that, you know, it's going to be 6 days. They had told him that over the phone and in the emails.
Right,
and,
if it's not in the contract.
But it wasn't in the contract
itself.
It's not
itself. Binding, right.
So it's not binding.
Right, anything said on the phone is
Or in their promotional materials, because they sent him all the promotional materials.
Gone.
And it all says, you know, beautiful brochures. It also 6 to 8 weeks. You're going to have your book on the shelf in time for, this was in time for Christmas. Like
that's not a legal commitment.
18 months ago.
Unless it's in writing in the contract, it's not a legal commitment. So it's not enforceable.
So even if they send you a really fancy, expensive brochure and they say 6 to 8 weeks, it doesn't mean that you have to.
Correct. They don't, no obligation, no legal obligation to perform.
And quite honestly, I think he did not even read the contract. I mean, he read the brochure.
So the devil's in the details.
Exactly.
Right? That's why you got to have a lawyer in there, because a lawyer can forecast these kind of problems, because a lawyer has seen these kind of situations. As a trial lawyer myself, when I take a look at negotiations or deals, I can foresee the problems that are coming, because I've done it so many times. I almost like I have a crystal ball. All right? And so we try to head that off. Okay, and I can suggest to the client, well, have you thought about this? What are you going to do when this happens, right? And then, well, I never thought about that. I don't know what I do. Well, let me tell you what you need to do, right? And we try to build that into the contract. There's no such thing as a contract that will cover 100% of everything all the time and save you. It's just not the way it works. It's just can be as good as it can get. But there are certain, let's say, a dozen things in there that most really good lawyers will say, these are essential to protect you.
Okay. Well, Bill, this is fantastic information today for all of our listeners, and I'm going to put this particular interview up on my archive page, because I think everybody should listen to it and learn. And I want to thank you so much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
It's been great to see you. And keep up on this case, and we'll find out what happens to the zombie killer.
All right. My prediction is settlement.
Okay, great. Okay, nice to see you guys today.
Thanks,
Beth. Bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, Laura Kennedy. And she has come in here prepared with notes. I mean, notes. This girl has notes. Oh, it's so fun. She's such a fun author. She had me laughing quite a few times while I was reading her books. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I paid you. I said I included a 20 with it. Okay, I'm glad somebody's laughing.
Oh, she is so good. I before we get to her books, we're going to talk about her mom. But I can tell you some things in her books are so funny. I sometimes I'm not sure if she actually wanted me to laugh, but I'm laughing. So that's always, I think that's a good sign. So, Laura, let's talk about your mom.
Let's talk about her. We called her Goggy.
Goggy?
We didn't when we were little, but one of my daughters, when she was little, couldn't say grandma. So anyway, from now on, the last zillion years, she's been Goggy. Well, you know, if I could have picked a mother out of the universe, I would have picked her. I couldn't have done a conventional mother who was, you know, telling you when to drink your milk and, you know, when and to breathe. She was a writer, a professional writer. She wrote love stories. I remember the confessions. Yes, they were true. They were based on reality.
Confession. Did she do those True Confession magazines?
Yes, she did.
When I was a little girl, some of my aunts would have these True Confession magazines. You know, we would be, for the summer, we'd be at the cottage on Lake Superior, and they would have these
True Confessions, true story.
Oh, yeah.
Bless them because you know what? They kept shoes on my feet.
We weren't supposed to read them, but
Wow. You know, actually, they had very strict censors.
Oh, yes.
The titles were kind of salacious, you know. I remember going to first grade, and then the teacher asked, "And what does your mother have out now?" And I said, "Kisses for Dollar Bills." And they all laughed. You know. But she wrote and sold 2 stories a month. For about 30, 35 years.
Wow.
Unbelievable. I mean, to crank them out like that. Yeah. Yeah, she was phenomenal. I was raised in Minneapolis, and, you know, something she could do at home, be home with us, and she was really good. So I always knew I wanted to be a writer. My mother, when I was little, what do I know about movie stars? I was going to be a movie star because my mother wanted to be a movie star. Well, that's another story. We'll tell you in a minute. So when I was about 5, I fell down. I got a scar on my leg. And I said, you know, I had to have stitches. Now I can't be a movie star. And she said, no, they can put me. No. So I have to be a writer. 5 years old. And so I is. Well, actually, my mother wanted to be in show business. She grew up in Minneapolis. And as I came in today, I heard the Andrews sisters. She went one summer to this little local studio, and she was dancing, learned to dance. She had good legs. And the Andrews sisters were there practicing. They were from Minneapolis.
Oh, I know.
So they went on to, you know, big, big fame. Her father wanted to be a judge. Her mother wanted to be a teacher. She wanted to be a movie star. You know, there's an issue there. She ended up a teacher, and she met my dad. And the rest is history. Okay, let's see. She was really funny. I mean, in a very tongue-in-cheek. Just think Joan Crawford, Barbara Stanwyck. A lot of posing going on in those days. You know, so she'd get ready for the writer's workshop on Wednesday night in Minneapolis. You get that kind of sultry look on your face, and off you go. Yeah, it turned out some good writers in that. It's still going on, I guess. And let's see. Okay, so I always knew what I wanted to do, so I thought, well, when I get married and have a baby and I'm broke, and it came, you know what? It came, was just like that. I will put my money where my mouth is, as they say, and write. And I wrote my first story. I borrowed her typewriter. I didn't have the money to buy a typewriter. I wrote it in a week. 2 weeks later, after sending it, True Confessions, one of the McFadden Bartell, the top confession magazine, an acceptance for $225.
Wow.
That was a lot of money then, too. And I was off. And I, you know, I wrote, and over the next 10 years or so, I didn't write that many because I kept having babies. You know, I was like, I couldn't figure it out. Cause and effect, you do this, and that, and this. Okay.
Okay. It took her a little time
took
there.
Took a little time.
Some practice.
So I didn't have a real lot of time, but I wrote 30 stories, and I sold 24.
Oh, that's great.
Had a great track record. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So you learned from your mother.
And, osmosis, sort of. Yeah.
And, well, yes, you are. You have a, I wish everyone could see you because you're very, You're very funny. You're very, you could have been an actress because you are very demonstrative, let's say.
I know it. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I've been in a couple of little independent movies. One, my friend Gus. Gus, are you hearing me? Probably not because I didn't let you know. But Gus Perez, he's a local actor. He's been in hundreds of commercials. And he did a movie, maybe 10 years ago or so. It was called Light of Blood. Look it up. Light of Blood. And I play a gypsy. I was pouting for a while because I thought I was going to be the scientist. And my husband said, dear, there are no small parts, only small actresses. Okay, I would have a good attitude. And then I went around saying things like, in the old country, we have stories of man who's not a man. That kind of stuff. And my granddaughter was in it. She wanted to be an actress when she was young. Of course, everybody discouraged her except me. I don't have any sense. I want to be an actress, Mookie. Okay, Mookie. I want to be an actress. Oh, okay. So when Gus needed someone, I need one more person, a receptionist. I said, well, I know someone. Oh, how old is she? Well, she just turned 13. I said, well, she's 13, but she looks more mature. I mean, you know, the screen does that to you.
Yeah.
I mean, all these young actresses in the teens and the 20s, you know, they're 15, 16 years old. So she's on that thing. So, you know, someday when I'm in the great beyond, she'll have this. And here's her grandmother running around as a gypsy. And then, she, you know, so we got that.
Okay.
Take a breath.
take a breath. It's like that with you. It's sort of like that in your writing because I've also found myself, like, taking a breath. My goodness, what is this woman? She's like... I've had the queen of romance writers, I've had the queen of mystery writers, and I think you're going to like be the queen of acute observer writers.
Hey,
because you take everyday observations and turn them into a story. I'm not sure, you know. Which one should I start with?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Pick one. Here's a book.
Let's start with this. I'm going to hold it up because actually we are on camera.
My God. I hope I'm not.
Of lilacs. Yeah, you are.
I am. Oh, my dear. Oh, my God.
And we'll start with this.
Okay.
The breeding of lilacs. I'm not sure. When I started, I said, okay. I don't want to give it away because it's so much fun. I love the postage stamp.
Oh, after stamp?
Don't say
well,
that.
You know, it's on the back of the book. I don't think it ruins the novel.
A certain politician who shall remain nameless because today would have to give him equal coverage.
Did I put him in there too? Oh my God.
I cannot say the name because, you know, today it's election day.
I know.
And if I say his name, then the...
Then we got to say the other name.
Right. And, you know, if you're going to have these weird, let's just put it, weird fantasies, but very...
We love him.
Well, it's so funny. I will mention the Greek's name. I love Greek.
Oh, Nick. I have some Greek. You know, I live in Tarpon.
She has some Greeks around. Well, the story, we have to tell people a little bit about the breeding of my life. You tell them.
Oh, well.
What the heck?
Me? Okay. Well, Barbie Bentley, and somebody told me after I used the name, isn't that the name of a former Playboy Playboy
wife? Well, Centerfold, I think.
Centerfold. Sorry. Barbie Bentley. I said, yes, but why not? I said, in Tarpon Springs, I call it Coral Cove.
Yes.
Why, I'm not quite sure anymore, but I did. Anyway.
Because Tarpon Springs might sue you?
No, I don't think so.
They should be proud of it.
It's the first one, but I did them backwards, but I do everything backwards, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, she has married her husband. What else is new? And then... I'm at mine right now. Honey, are you listening? Okay.
And don't ask her for any stamps tonight. I can tell you that.
No stamp. No stamp. Well, actually, that line was his. Yeah. But she's met her husband, so she goes out because she's really a very nice girl. She's
very nice.
She's lovely.
She's a mother.
Yeah, she cleans a lot, children. Just like me. Look, I have no fingernails.
That's right.
My toenails look good. If I cleaned with them, they wouldn't look good either. But I'm always cleaning. I was cleaning the table out there with a window.
I noticed that.
You know, when in doubt, clean. That's my motto. So, anyway, she's met her husband, and she meets this. Ooh, and he's met her.
This is why I always bring in water for my guests. Because
a drink.
Especially,
I don't
especially
drink.
Here.
Actually, I don't drink.
No, especially, you know, when I have somebody who really likes to talk long. Now she's going to choke up.
All right, now I'm not going to be afraid to speak. Okay, so she meets this kid. She goes to school. Improve her mind.
Yes,
and all
middle-aged.
Right. We all think, well, gee, people don't think I'm too smart. So anyway, I'll show them. I'll go to school.
That's right. And I'm going to study psychology. Show them I really know things.
Yeah. So she meets him, and we won't tell anymore. But some interesting things happen, and I weave in characters. It's funny about characters. I don't know if you ever read, but Charles Dickens used to say that, like when he was writing the old Curiosity Shop, when he stopped to eat dinner, his characters, like Little Nell, would come to his and tug on his sleeve and tell him to please come back and write. The characters become very real, and they take on a life of their own, just like secondary characters, Elaine and her lesbian character in her girlfriend Kiki.
Uh-huh.
Kiki was a little. Nobody liked Kiki, but everybody liked Elaine. So they just evolve, and they just grow, and you kind of have to let them, but don't let them take over because they want to sometimes.
Yes, and Nick, one would not mind if Nick takes over sometimes.
Oh, no, and Nick, good one.
There are some points where very nice if he takes over.
Handsome guy.
Yeah.
So anyway, but you know, like in the Confessions, you sin, sorrow, pay. You got to pay.
She's from the old school.
Yeah,
this is true confession.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the old True Confession magazine.
Now they just sin and go on to, you know, become,
They become stars on television.
That's right.
Millions and zillions of dollars.
It doesn't matter, but you know, the Minnesota influence.
Yeah.
Real good now.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. We can, but we have to get back to the basics.
You betcha.
Yeah, betcha. I'm a Youper, you know.
Oh, you
I'm
are?
I'm from Northern Michigan.
Oh, my God.
So I know you people from Minnesota.
That's why I learned about pasties.
Pasties.
I used to call them pasties, but I don't know.
That was a terrible thing with my name. As a matter of fact, with a name like Patsy, I'm always getting pasty. No, that's why I always tell people my name is Patsy with a Z.
So have you ever made pasties?
Have I made pasties? Oh, wow. Yes.
I have.
Oh, yes.
Not many. My brother called them Robin Hood pies.
Well, my, we used to live on pasties when I.
Oh, love them.
Love them. Love them. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like a great pasty. So, yeah. Okay. That's our northern upbringing. But we're here and we don't miss the snow.
No, we don't.
So, okay, well, that takes care of The Breeding of Lilacs, which I think everybody should read because it is fun. It's a fun read. And how can I say? It's clean, but very nice. I would highly recommend that book to everybody. But then you have, and this is a nice thing, you have your adult fiction, female fiction, not too adult, and then you have you have a very nice. I'm going to hold this book up too, and it's called Surf Shop Sisters.
Okay,
whoa, and it's a nice cover.
They did a fabulous job. I really have to say, my artist, Carolyn Andrus at Melange.
Did a nice job.
She does great work. She's a little sweetheart, and I am happy with all the covers.
And this also takes place in Coral Cove because what?
She is Barbie's daughter, Brooke.
That's right.
Little Brooke Bentley. What a little darling.
So, absolutely. And they get into some interesting. She has a group of girls, so it's a young adult
sisters,
and
yep.
it's tell us about it.
Well, let's see. Surf works at a surf. How about a surf? How about Brooke? She works at a surf shop called Surf's Up, and down on the Sponge Docks. And anyway, three little friends there, and she gets into some, you know, some little issues. She's got a friend named Maria, and she's always been taking the blame for Maria from the time in nursery school when she broke the CD player. And now she's always trying to, Maria, who's always boo-hooed, gorgeous little Hispanic girl, wants to see her boyfriend who's going off to the military. And he's pressuring her to have, you know what, we don't want to even say it.
No, we don't want to think about it.
No, we don't even want to talk about it. But they don't think it's a good idea. But, you know what you got to do, what you have to do for the cause. So they arrange a night, and, of course, ultimately, Maria, well, we will see. But things happen. And then again, you know, sins after pay, the consequences for that night that incriminates them, I should say. The rest of them, like, where were they that night when something happened? Well, when a theft happened, well, they didn't want to say where they were. So they got a little bit of a weak alibi. But the plot thickens, as they say. And Brooke is a good little girl. She's always trying to do the right thing, just like me. I try to do the right thing. But sometimes it doesn't come out that way, you know?
Well, it's a cute book. It's really a great book. I think a super read for
third place.
Teenagers.
FWA.
Huh?
That's the one I won the award for, FWA.
That's what we are just about to mention.
Okay.
So it won this past weekend, 2 weekends ago?
2 weekends.
And so Surf Shop Sisters won third prize.
Third place. My frenemy, as they call it. My frenemy, Bardo.
Gino Bardi.
Bardo. Genie. Gino Bardi, my good friend. What's his name? He won first place again. I still love him. Hi, Gino. Are you listening?
I hope so, because I love Gino Bardi. He wrote The Cow in the Doorway.
Yeah.
The Cow in the Doorway. I love that book.
Funny book.
It's a coming-of-age book set in 1968. Anybody who lived through 1968 should read it. And anybody who wants to know what it was like 1968 should read it. And just anyone who wants a good laugh should read it. Because I think it's a great book.
It's a great book.
It's
so
fun.
When he won first place.
You couldn't. He's so sweet. You can't.
Couldn't be too mad.
Yeah, you can't be mad at Gino.
Yeah.
He's too.
And
he's adorable.
Our group did very well. The Tarpon Group. We won eight awards.
Wow.
Four with David Edmonds and his wife Maria.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a fantastic writing group.
It is.
And you are really turning out some talented writers there.
We are cranking them out. But of course, we have, you know, years. You know, it isn't like yesterday I started. We've been doing this for years. But it's a nice
group.
Nice mix.
And
yeah.
For one writing group to bring in eight prizes is fantastic.
We had more than any group in the state. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And, you know, it's just wonderful. I'm so happy that you are going to have your books now at the Miami Avenue Book Nook. And we are very thrilled and very thankful that Bev Malley has generously taken a part in her store. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you've been there since she moved it and made it larger.
No,
expanded
I was it. Up north for a
She's
while.
Expanded it because we've had some very nice response. And we have at least, I think, 35 local authors that we're showcasing now.
Great.
And we're so proud of all of you and all of the authors who are participating. And I just want to encourage everyone to go down there. Wonderful place to go for some Christmas shopping. Get books, because the nice thing about Miami Avenue is there are a variety of books. And like in Laura's case, she has young adult books, perfect for any teenager in your life. This I think any teenager will relate to the Surf Shop Sisters. And then any crazy housewife?
All housewives are a little crazy.
Yeah, all housewives are a little crazy. I mean, what can you do? But any of them will, and I'm going to hold up another one of the books. I didn't get to read this. This is Double Take.
That's a sequel.
Sequel. Oh wow.
Got short hair there. Huh? She has short hair there. Something happened. We can't tell.
Again, a beautiful cover.
Gorgeous.
I don't know who that person is, but that is.
Her name is Carolyn Andress.
Wow.
Yeah. She does wonderful work. I am so happy with that little darling really, that she is.
Really fantastic cover.
And then I have the one other I'll mention.
Yeah, then, sure. You have time.
Oh, I have time. Oh, my God. You know, I can minutes. Just talk for years.
Yeah, that's right.
It's called See Mommy Run. My first novel. Remember, did you learn to read with the Dick and Jane
book? Oh, yeah.
Book?
Oh, didn't we all?
See Dick run. You know, see Jane run. See Spot run.
Oh, yes. They were running all over the place.
They were
running. I don't know what they were
doing. Run from Spot.
That's
see,
right.
Bites.
And I ran from those books because I wanted to read True Confessions, to tell you the truth. I was reading True Confessions when I was 6 years old.
Oh, well, good.
You know, yeah.
Well, you fed me.
You know. Oh, think of that. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh.
Anyway, well, See Mommy Run, you can look that one up. That one is funny, too.
Okay, well, if you want just a good laugh, or if you just want to drool over a hunky Greek.
I'm
stuck on that hunky Greek. I don't know what, can't imagine why.
You got to go up to Tarpon and look for him.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, I want to thank you so much, Laura, for coming in today. You are a hoot. And a half.
And I have. Thank you. So much fun being here.
Oh, well, it's just been great. And I just want to tell everyone that, you know, it's just, it's just so much fun to have somebody like this.
Well, you know, I just hang out. You can find me somewhere.
I think I'm going to
find me at the Sponge Dock.
That's right. I'll find her at the Sponge Dock, and I'm going to have her back because it's a fun half hour. It went so fast. I can't believe it. I could talk to you for many, many hours.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I do want to, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
okay.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm going to have on Thursday, and this is the third announcement for this woman, and she better show up this time.
Show up, honey.
Leigh Bardugo is going to be on Thursday at 11. I had her schedule once a month ago, and they canceled. Then she was supposed to be on last Thursday, and we're waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and oh, Big Ed in the control room keeps waving his hands at me. She isn't calling.
I wouldn't want to mess with Big Ed.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to mess with Big Ed. And, you know, and I think, well, you know, I should tell her, we call him Big Ed because he's going to come out and get you for not, you know, calling in. But, you know, she's in Hollywood, and they sleep late. And what the
Hollywood.
Heck? I mean, you know, Hollywood, they can sleep late.
They can do whatever they want.
That's right. But this week, she is definitely going to wake up and talk to us about her absolutely amazing best-selling book, Crooked Kingdom. You know, she sells like a zillion of these books. A zillion.
I mean,
she's like, she's like such a bestseller.
Ooh.
And we want to talk to her about how she got this way. And, so it's going to be fun to talk to Leigh Bardugo on Thursday. And I also have David O. Stewart, who wrote The Babe Ruth Deception, and just in time for everybody who's interested in baseball at the moment. So join me on Thursday. And meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And come back on Thursday at 11 o'clock. And hopefully Leigh Bardugo is going to wake up and smell the coffee and call in. Okay. Bye for now.